I know we don't do the stories all the time, but I really like the stories. So I'm going to start with a story. Let's see here. You know, my favorite story is, Dare to Do Motivations. So I'm going to share the screen.
Once upon a time, there were three old friends. They were all scholars, leading busy lives. But they made it a point to meet once a year to make sure they would always stay in touch with one another. But this time, the gathering felt different. They were all getting old and starting to feel their age.
Oh.
Sensing this,
the first scholar remarked, "We are all here together this year, enjoying each other's company. But who can say with certainty if we will all be able to come back and be together again next year?" The second scholar laughed. "Next year? I think you may be looking too far ahead and assuming too much. Today I am alive, but who can say with certainty if tomorrow I will open my eyes to greet another day?" They turned to the third scholar, who had been quiet. He looked up at them thoughtfully and said, "Tomorrow? My friends, as I sit here with you, I do not know if each breath I draw will be my last. Who can say with certainty if one breath will be followed by another?" You see, in life, in your life, this story is short but deeply meaningful. The first scholar measured life in terms of years, as most people do. We think about the number of years we have lived, and we still have. The truth is that we may not have many years, or even 1 year, ahead of us. Life, rather than measuring it in years or days, flows from one moment to the next, from one breath to the next. We simply do not know how many minutes or seconds we still possess. So the people who are important to you in your life, be grateful now, this moment, and not tomorrow or next year. Thank them now for their friendship, and count your blessings of having a family right now. This is Dare to Do Motivation Stories. Thanks for watching, and stay blessed.
I like that. I think what I was supposed to talk about today, at least what I've been thinking about, is the connection between stillness and the endings of things. This is the last sort of week to think about. Actually, it's like the last couple of days of the month around death. And I know we've talked a lot about death in all different ways. But the thing that I wanted to talk about is how death has to do with stillness. The allowing the endings of things and to recognizing the endings of things is connected to our ability to be still, and not still like not the kind of stillness that maybe you're thinking of when you're deeply concentrated and you're deeply settled. I'm talking about the kind of stillness that's connected to contentment, that you actually enjoy your life as it's unfolding right now, and not always agitated about the future life that you're trying to live. That's why I picked that little story, is because the death that I wanted to end us with is the death of this idea of a future, and instead leave us connected to what would be considered the deathless, which is only now, only now, only now, only now, only now. And having a degree of contentment in the only nowness of it. There is something freeing about nothing else but now. Some of our societal ways of being, with the set times and the set ways of being, and you know, I don't know if I told you guys, but when my kids were little, I used to have a running joke with them. There's two boys, and I didn't want them to be going around impregnating women all over the place. So I used to, when they were little, I'm talking about infants, I would give them the order of things. So I would tell them, okay, let's run down the order of things. And so I told them, first they have to get through high school. Then they got to go to college. Then they got to get a car, get a really good job, buy a house. Then they can find a girl. Then they could have sex, and then they could have kids. And so as they got older, when they were little, it was like, oh, the order of things. They would know the order. But as they got older, that order got a little jumbled up. But in society, that's sort of the way we try to, that's the way we were all raised. We were raised that you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. And so there's an expectation that death is going to interrupt anything, and that death has to come after we've done everything. So there's a way in which we are living into the future and not living actually here in the present moment. Part of the cultivation of death is designed to help us come into a stillness, a contentment with the way things are right now. So nothing more than our time together. This is it. Nothing more than contemplating this day as this day. Nothing more than just this day. There's nothing more than this cup of tea. There's a way in which allowing the understanding that everything ends, and this knowing that we've talked about death, about the death of people, about the death of loved ones, about grief, about just the impermanent nature of things. We come down to one final piece, which is this great happiness in the moment that you're in. That if we could begin to cultivate a level of contentment and happiness in the moment we're in, we touch into deathless. It's such a strange word, deathless, because it feels like deathless means the body's not going to die. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the way we live is actually in each moment. So each moment, if we are present and content with that moment as it is, then there is no death, because the moment itself is however that moment is. And it struck me when my mother died years ago that she probably doesn't even care that she's dead. I'm the one that's doing all the whining and complaining about it, but she's probably gone off talking to God, walking through the vineyards. She don't care. And I am stuck in this place of not wanting to let her go, because that moment of death, when it's your last breath, that's the end of it. There is no you trying to, you're not cultivating this kind of, I don't want to die, I don't want to die when you get to the last breath. So it's as if you are allowing your life to live more fully in relation to the way we actually are, which is each moment is an opportunity to enjoy this moment. Some practices that I thought about that could help us do this is this. Here's one. Just notice how often you are thinking about something other than what you are doing. How much do we actually pay attention to what we're actually doing? And how much are we thinking about something in the future? In the moments we're in, I'm washing the dishes, but I'm thinking about something else. But how much is our attention brought on what we're doing? That's one way to begin to notice. Another way to think about this is, how often is your body and mind aligned? How often are you actually aligned with the present moment so that your mind is aware you're in the present moment and the body is in the present moment? Usually our body's in the present moment and our mind is somewhere else. So how often do you align the mind and body in the same present moment? That's another way to begin to cultivate this the stillness and contentment of where you are. The last way is, oftentimes we pay more attention to our thoughts than we do the other sense doors. But, you know, from dependent origination, they're all sense doors. So any given moment, check in with what your eyes are seeing, what your ears are hearing, what you're smelling. Rarely do we notice smelling unless we're getting ready to eat, but we're always smelling all the time. What you're smelling, what you're tasting, there's always taste in the mouth. And what felt sensories, what are you feeling? And check in with those sense doors on a regular basis, bringing them here. What you're ultimately beginning to see is how interconnected everything is in a given moment. And contentment arises out of that interconnectedness. I think part of the problem with contentment is that we are incongruent. I remember years ago, a therapist used to ask me if I felt congruent. Did I feel congruency is what she used to ask me. So, and I'm like, I guess, yes, I don't know. I mean, what is congruency? She goes, I don't know. You have to figure that out. But ask yourself, do you feel congruent? And over the years, I think that is a great kind of thing, even for Dhamma practitioners. Congruency to me is your mind and body together? Do you feel congruent? Do you feel like you're present in the moment you're in? Are you your appropriate age? Or do you feel like you're 5 sitting there, but really you're like 37, you know, 90, 57, but do you feel 5 years old? And the congruency is the knowing of that. So are you in this moment? Do you feel your actual age, or are you living into a different age? Do you feel whatever the attitude is in the mind? Do you know whether or not you're grumpy or upbeat, or how you're feeling? Do you know that? Or are you lost in some wishing you were some other way or believing you are some other way? This idea of congruency is also connected to this sense of contentment and stillness in the present moment. It might seem like I mean, even as I was thinking about this, I thought to myself, I could see where people would say, what does this have to do with death? And when I saw that dare to do motivation, that's when I realized this is what I think he was pointing to. This is what I'm pointing to. That our sense of congruency and contentment and stillness in the present moment has everything to do with how we feel about death. Because if we are afraid of dying, we will use every moment to try to force ourselves to live longer. And we don't have any control over how long we're going to live. If we're afraid of dying, we will ignore the endings of things and get entangled in trying to control everything so that we have the kind of life we want. If we're afraid of dying, we can get caught in the grief and the despair of the death that happens around us. We don't have any control over that. So in a way, if we don't contemplate death, we can't fully live because we're too busy trying to ignore the inevitable that's coming. Contemplating death is where joy comes from because you begin to recognize that you could die any minute. You could die tonight. We don't know. We assume if we go to bed, we're going to get up in the morning. But we could die this evening. No, it's not based on your age. It's anything. It's not based on how healthy you are, whether you eat good food. We could die. That's just the fact of it. So the only really time that you have to live and actually enjoy life is right now. Because right now, you know you're alive. And right now, there is nothing more important. If you knew you were going to die tonight, you would treat this day pretty good. Either that, I don't know. I mean, some people might whine all day because they're going to die tonight. And then the night would come and they would die. I don't know. I would think I would have the dignity like Thaddeus and be like, you know, hey, I'm going to enjoy myself. He says, I can do whatever I want at this point. I would hope that's the way I'm going to be. But you don't know. There's a book called In Love with the World by Mingma Rinpoche. If you've never read that book, it is difficult to read. A lot of people don't like that book. It's so difficult to read. But I loved it. It's hard to keep my attention in a book, and I loved that book. And the reason why I loved it is because oftentimes I, like you probably, I'm assuming, think that great practitioners, great teachers, enlightened beings, they don't struggle. They got it all smooth and easy. They know exactly what to do. And Mingma Rinpoche, the book is about a famous Tibetan Lama, great Lama, who's a Rinpoche, so I guess he's past Lama. He wants to do, Tibetans do like year-long retreats, 3 years, year-long. And he wanted to do a three-year retreat outside in the world without any of the trappings of his Tibetan practice. He is a Rinpoche, highly realized. So he, from the time he was a little kid, he's like his holiness. He's treated with kid gloves and he's always had people protecting him. He's never had to want for anything or he's never been, you know, he doesn't have to do anything. He's always been sheltered and protected. And so he wanted to go out in the world and his father, who also was a great Rinpoche, told him to do it. But his father told him, this is how you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to sneak out in the dead of night because no way they let you outside. So you got to get your stuff together and you got to sneak out. And that's what he has to do. He has to leave everybody without telling anybody where he's at. And he knows everybody's going to be upset. So he writes this long letter to kind of help everybody and tell them, I'm going on a 3-year retreat. No money. He has a little bit of money in his pocket, but he figures he'll work and make his way through, right? He doesn't know nothing about the outside world. And he comes face to face with a lot of prejudice and judgment and all these things that did not show up when he was sequestered and taken care of and tucked in. But when he got out there in the real world and he came face to face with smelly people, homeless people, because he didn't have any money. So he's living with the homeless people. He's begging like everybody else. And these people are not clean and well taken care of. They are a different quality of people, a different breed here. And he comes face to face with some horrific things. And he even cried many times. It's just such a touching book. But he comes face to face with his own mortality because he eats some bad food. And then he comes face to face with his mortality. And what he articulated, because he is a strong practitioner, his articulation of the confusion, the worry, the constant trying to practice in the face of death, is just so inspiring to me. And ultimately, he came to this place of stillness that if he was going to die, he was going to die. That's just it. I mean, I knew he didn't die because I know Mingmar Rinpoche, so I know something happened. But the point was, I thought he articulated that place where you come face to face with death. It was not agitated, is what I'm saying. It was stillness. It was peace. It was acceptance. It was, it is the gift that death brings us. And once he came to that place where he accepted that he was going to die, he lived from then on. He was supposed to stay out there 3 years and he stayed out there almost four. Never sent word to the monastery, never asked for help, lived a tremendous amount of life and, you know, better for it. But that's what we're coming to. That's what the end of death is. It's about coming to face to face with death and finding the truth that, oh my God, it doesn't matter what kind of life I have, it's worth living. This life is a precious life that I have. And we won't always come to that understanding unless we're willing to accept that for good or for worse, we're going to die and leave it. I think I'll leave it there. Thank you so much. So let's have some chance to talk about it. This is your last time to talk about death. I really don't want to point it anyway. I want you to talk about whatever is alive for you around this month of death. And what have you seen or come to understand? And what do you want to take with you on into your life to hold on to? You know, whatever comes up with you with the group. All right. So let's take, how about 12 minutes, I guess. That should be three. It's about 4 minutes apiece. That should be pretty good. So everybody's got three people in the room. And I'll call you back in about 12 minutes. All right. There you go. So let's see if anybody would like to share any comments about what you talked about or, you know, just the ending of this month around death.
Tuari?
Yes.
Sorry. Akila, you want to?
I'm sorry.
I can wait.
Okay. I just want to say I'm really grateful for this lecture series because it's really helped me with transitions in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I moved and.
That's right. You did.
Yes. I finally moved. Yay. I'm on First Hill.
Oh, yay. Great. You're not that far from me.
Uh-uh. So I moved, you know, as due, you know, to COVID, I had to let go of a lot of friendships. So it was a lot of death. you know, in my life.
And yeah.
So, a series has really, 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 really helped me. And I think this lecture that you gave today with this Dharma talk that you gave today around stillness being a sort of acceptance, it was like, oh yeah, I never thought of that. I just thought of stillness as being like, you sit in meditation and you get quiet and the answers come. But stillness in regards to like acceptance, like, oh, okay, this happened. You know, it's almost like driving and then you come to a stop sign. You're like, oh, I have to stop now.
Yeah,
you know, but there are people that run the stop sign all the time. But, you know, it was a really good Dharma talk.
Good. Thank you. Really good.
Oh, and are you doing any more meditation classes?
There is an introduction to meditation that's starting.
Okay. I'm going to let my aunt in California know. So
yeah,
how does she do it?
Just go come to the website. Just go to the website. It actually starts in a couple of weeks.
June 17th.
June 17th. And she'll be able to do it online. So yeah, it's fine.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. All right. Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that we talked about wanting or thinking that we really needed to keep being reminded of looking towards death. And I was just thinking, I wonder if there was some way, maybe in our closing or something for Sunday Sits, how could we continue this, some piece of it as a reminder? Because there's so much pushing us in the opposite direction, mm-hmm. not to look at death, not to contemplate it, not to believe. And I was just listening to Arv's talk from the one I missed, where he talked about a study where there's such an innate drive for us to live, and fear of death.
Yeah,
that it we really have to work to practice. So
that's right.
That's all I wanted to share.
So one way we could just think about incorporating something in the closing or incorporating something in our statement, that we do our community statement. We don't have to do the exact same community statement we started with years ago. We could completely change it.
Although it's good, but we could bring
it. I know, I do like it.
Yeah.
But we can rethink it.
Yeah.
So it's like that. You just bring ritual into the moment, mm-hmm. however you want to remind you of it. Good. Anyone else want to share anything?
I just recall a few talks back when somebody referenced a speaker and they said, always treat death as if it is the end of your left hand, if it's always just right there at the end of your arm, practically. And I think that it's a really good advice. Just to, when you're living, just think, not in a negative way, but just think about the other. Just keep the balance.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Because you'll come to realize that contemplating and keeping the balance around death actually enriches your ability to live. It's when we let go of the reality that we could die, that we're so flippant with our partners and our kids and our friends because we think they're always going to be there. But when you realize that things are going to end, you just have more appreciation for that right now. I see your hand, Carol.
Yes, I am unmuted. And so I actually hooked into the contentment and the difficulty with contentment, or I guess what is contentment? And I think at the end of our back and forth, I was wondering if that because what I try to do is be present with oftentimes the agitation, the tension, just to be present with it. And so I just wonder if contentment is kind of superseded on top of that there is a way to it could include acceptance or whatever, or stillness within that. That's the difficulty to me, how to achieve that sense of contentment without, it obviously, if I'm agitated, I either run away from it or I'm present with it. So I guess if you wanted to just say something more about that contentment and what is contentment and what are you meaning by that?
Contentment, for a long time, I thought of contentment as I'm okay with everything. That's what contentment means. Yeah. And you're right. When you're agitated, it's impossible to be okay with agitation. So I can't be content. But no, that's not what contentment is. That's not the contentment. Contentment is you just know there's agitation there. I like the way Philip Moffitt says it. He calls it well-being that includes non-well-being. I don't know where he got that from. But so, yes, you have agitation. But the agitation is not going to be there forever. It just happens to be here now. And we all know agitation. We've been agitated. So, and we will be agitated again in the future. So the idea is to not treat agitation like it's somehow a sign that something's wrong that needs to be fixed. It's just, this is agitation. And contentment is that a willingness, I think, of being agitated without agitation have to go away.
Well,
it's going to go away anyway, so you don't have to do anything. You're just going to look up, and 2 hours from now, you won't be agitated. Or you could be agitated all day, but tomorrow you won't be. You could be agitated all week, but then at the end of the week, you won't be. It's sort of like this understanding that it doesn't matter how long that agitation is there. It's going. But if you dwell on that agitation, that's probably why you're agitated for a week, because you keep dwelling on trying to get rid of it. So instead, the contentment is allowing agitation to be here. It is the nature of human beings to be agitated. One of the quotes I read for the sit that I was at, I loved this quote. Something I always remind myself of. It says, all Buddhas emerge from the human realm. This is out of the numerical discourses. All Buddhas emerge from the human realm. None have ever attained Buddhahood in the heaven realm. So all that wish to be in that blissful state of pleasure and joy, yeah, we're not going to become no Buddhas, not getting enlightened in that way. If you're going to become a Buddha, you are going to have to do it up here. Like Rodney always said, you know, when the second coming comes, I'm staying down on earth with the rest of the folks. That's where it's going to get real. I'm not going up. So it's like that. It's this. That's what contentment is. You are okay that you are agitated. It's okay. It'll be here as long as it is, and then it'll go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good. All righty, good people.
So, Ari,
yeah.
What you just said makes me think that if we let go of our expectation or image of what contentment is, then there's the possibility to allow it to surface. That was what came after you're just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, you're right, because it's the felt sense of contentment, not the concept of contentment.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's it.